Welcome to the Cyan of Reekon podcast. I am Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Strawhead Reekon.
Today, we're going to be talking about Survivor Series. It's one of my favorite pay-per-views in all of WWE. I've always been a fan of it, all the way back to when I was a little kid, being able to see all the different teams just randomly assembled and thrown together. Actually, one of our very first classic match of the week was a Survivor Series match. What's your history with Survivor Series, Reekon?
I don't remember them vividly. The only memory I have as a child of Survivor Series was the one where Undertaker gets introduced. So I can't remember the year right now. But all I remember
1992,
was...
1992, I think?
Is that what it was?
Because 1993 was this Tuesday in Texas when he beat Hogan for the title.
Oh,
and
that's
that was
right.
Really early in his introduction. It was either 91 or 92.
Yeah, so I distinctly remember when I was watching the... As a kid, I remember watching that one live. And I just remember the gimmick being that there was a mystery partner. And I remember that being, like, strange because that had never really happened. I don't have any memory, or when I look at the old Survivor Series, I don't think it had been done where there was no mystery partner concept. And then in this one...
Million Dollar Man's mystery partner?
Mm-hmm. It was the Million Dollar Team, and I believe they were going against... was it Jake Snake Roberts' team, or... Whose team was it? I don't remember who they were going against. All I remember was that The Undertaker single-handedly destroyed that team. And I remember as a child, I was 11, if I'm not mistaken. So I was very impressionable. And I was scared shitless of The Undertaker when he first appeared.
I was about 5 years old, and I watched that match. And I remember being terrified by The Undertaker.
Right, yeah.
I think he body-bagged him up in that match, too, didn't he?
Were they
on the body bag?
No, I don't think he was doing the body bag. He was just very when he did the tombstone, he was emphatically making the hands over the heart, so it seemed like he was killing them. Like it looked like he was straight up murdering all these people.
He just sent all of their souls straight to hell. Oh my goodness.
That's my history with Survivor Series. Like that's what I think about when I think of this pay-per-view.
Survivor Series, what Survivor Series meant to me was actually based on a video game called WWF WrestleMania Challenge for the NES.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And this game, like, if you look at it and you just saw it today, you would be like, oh, this is garbage. But in my opinion, it's like one of the best versus games ever made in history. Just because it was one of, like, five video games I owned for the first, like, 10 years of my life. This game, you would play as this character that you could choose that was yourself. You could also play as Brutus Barber Beefcake, Ravishing Rick Rude, Andre the Giant, Big Boss Man, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Macho Man Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, and the Ultimate Warrior, who was the champion at the time of the game coming out. In the video game, you could also play as yourself, who looked like I goddamn tell you, was like a mixture between like Bob Backlund and Vince McMahon. Like part of me thinks that Vince McMahon just put himself in the game like as like a wrestler or something. But he was like really generic and he just used like back body drop and regular body slam and stuff like that, while others had like a kind of a specialty move. But there was an option in the game where you could do a Survivor Series, and it was 3-on-3, and you could, like, go through and you can have all the guys, and that's what everyone who would come over to my house to play NES would play. We would only play the Survivor Series.
I remember this game now. Like, I'm looking at it.
So you could do 3 versus 3 and just go through, and you can be all like, oh, my gosh, it's Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, like the mega powers, or the Ultimate Mega Powers, or something like I would always call them. And like I would fight, and my friend would be like, oh, I'm gonna be Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And he would always like do the big running elbow, but he'd like slam against the ropes and like kill himself.
Yeah,
all sorts of stuff. But that was the game that I would always play. So I had that before I ever watched anything pay per view ever, and. Ooh. And so my brother, who had been living in another house and everything, invited me to come over and watch a pay-per-view, and it was the first pay-per-view I ever saw. It was Survivor Series. I think it was 1994. Yeah, well back. 20 years ago, actually. And I mean, I was just blown out of the water, because I was thinking, oh my god, it's gonna be just like the video game. Wasn't anything like the video game, but.
Nothing at all.
But for me, like, Survivor Series, just that name, like, carried so much weight before I ever got to watch it. And so I went through and I, from that point on, like, it was kind of like I would watch the Raws and all sorts of stuff whenever I could. And then I took kind of a break from wrestling and I came back, and Survivor Series was the first pay-per-view I watched in 1999 also.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of have this, like, rebirth, whenever I would, like, fall out of the wrestling love, coming back to
Survivor Series. Yeah, so most people, like, it's, you know, WrestleMania where it all begins again, you know, yeah, whatever, yeah, but yeah, you are Survivor Series.
Survivor Series, like, to me, like, Royal Rumble's always, like, quoted as, like, that road to WrestleMania begins with the Royal Rumble, and it does for, like, the direct angle, but I think Survivor Series, the fall, is when it all kicks up so that they can get started for it. Because I always just came back for it, and I'm kind of like Undertaker or Randy Orton in that way, where I always come back and do something in the Survivor Series, and they both proved me wrong this year, so, I mean, I guess it's dated information, but it used to be a thing, I promise. But, but yeah, Survivor Series was always one of my absolute favorite pay-per-views. I love watching the tag matches where they go against each other, and... It's never really let me down, except for those couple of years where they didn't actually have a Survivor Series match at the Survivor Series.
Yeah.
The worst wannabe Survivor Series concept they ever came up with was the championship scramble match. Do you remember the scramble?
Vaguely.
Oh, okay. So if you don't remember the scramble, let me give you a quick relay. So the scramble was basically a six-man free-for-all match.
Oh, that's right. They did two title matches with the scramble.
Two title matches with the scramble. And so what it was it was a, I want to say, 30-minute match.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time-limit match. And so this is my argument. The scramble is my argument against anybody who says matches should bring back time limits, because to hell with the scramble. So it was a 30-minute match, and they would start the clock, and it would be 30 minutes. And so you'd think, okay, they have within 30 minutes to beat the champion. Somebody has to beat the champion within 30 minutes to become the new champion, and that would be it. No, not true. It's a six-man match. They all fight against each other, and if you score a pinfall in the match, boom, you're the interim champion, But the match keeps going. Yeah, after a pinfall. So it keeps going. So it's like a mixture of, like, an Iron Man match with, like, a gauntlet match, tag team, whatever. And so Brian Kendrick one time, like, kicked Triple H and pinned him and got the 1-2-3, and it's like, Brian Kendrick is now the interim WWE champion. And then he gets, like, and then somebody else gets pinned, and it's like, John Cena is the interim WWE champion, and it keeps going for the full 30 minutes. So yeah. Whoever is interim WWE champion, when time runs out, becomes the official WWE champion. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. It's pathetic.
Yeah, I think when they did the scramble matches, the World Heavyweight Championship and the WWE Championship were contested under these rules in the same pay-per-view, and I remember it being, like, a big deal, and I haven't seen it ever since. That's why it took me a little bit to remember it, because I was like, I don't remember this, but then when you started explaining it.
I want to say that's the only time they ever did a scramble match. It should be the only time they ever did a scramble match, because, like I said, it's terrible.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Elimination Chamber debuted at Survivor Series. Am I right about that?
Yes, this Elimination Chamber, because it was the 2002 or 2004. It was from 2002 or 2004. It was one of those. and it was introduced as a way to end the feud between Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
If it was that feud, then it was 2002 for sure.
It was around that time, and I remember there was other people involved in that feud. I think Jericho was in that match. I know RVD was in that match.
Yeah, Jericho, RVD,
Goldberg,
Shawn Michaels.
Goldberg
wasn't in that one. Goldberg.
Oh, he was in the second.
Was in the SummerSlam one.
Okay. Because basically, it was set up, you know, for that feud, and that's how Shawn Michaels won it, right? That's how he got the title.
Yeah, he was in his little
brown
pants and.
Yeah, that was the like I said, that was the feud capper for that. And I remember the Survivor Series because, again, it was fitting to have, you know, a pay-per-view called Survivor Series where the person in the elimination chamber would survive the chamber. So it was actually, like, a really good way to do that. I kind of now miss the idea of having an elimination chamber match in the Survivor Series.
I kind of liked elimination chamber as
a pay-per-view
own thing. I think that's a match that can carry itself organically as being a thing that a pay-per-view is based on. I think Money in the Bank, I like it at WrestleMania better, but I think it can carry itself as its own pay-per-view. I just, like we talked about in our last pay-per-view review, I don't think Hell in a Cell carries itself as a pay-per-view thing. I don't think TLC does, so I'm hoping they do something really good with it at the upcoming pay-per-view. They're doing kind of what they have before. They announced that it's going to be John Cena versus Seth Rollins in a tables match at TLC. So I'm assuming there will be a ladder match, and then there will be, for the big match, there will be a TLC match, which is going to be Bray versus Dean Ambrose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that closes the show, because it would be very nice to see Bray versus Dean Ambrose close the show in a huge match like that. But most likely it's going to be Rollins versus Cena in a table match.
I'm not sure. I'm going to wait until we have like another week of the WWE programming to see like what they're selling as the main event. Because when Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose looked like it was going to be the main event for Hell in a Cell, but so did Orton and Cena. So I want to see where they go. If they go with, you know, wanting to have the young people headline the pay-per-view again. So I think that was a great idea. And obviously a lot of people agreed and liked the match. So
no, absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, Survivor Series, it's brought a lot of new things in addition to just the traditional Survivor Series matches, but I really like those Survivor Series matches. I think it's really exciting. No other match is as exciting than when you have those big odds come down and one person pushes through and becomes that sole survivor. Falls just short. Spoilers, right? Falls just short. I mean, I haven't been as excited during a match as I was during the Survivor Series match tonight in about, I would say, like 3 years.
I think the last time I was excited about a match per se was during WrestleMania, when I was excited for Daniel Bryan versus Triple H because of the repercussions that could happen because of it. When he won, I was excited for the main event match, and I was still excited throughout the whole match because I was still thinking he might not have gotten it. But I knew, like, the story had to be that he had to get the championship. So I think since then, since WrestleMania, this has been the match that really got, like, I was excited for this match as far as, like, the booking of it. And then when it actually played out, like, I can't remember who it was, but someone used the word masterpiece for this match. And I was like, yeah, I can go with that in the sense of, like, how it was booked and how it was performed and how there was highs and lows, and, you know, like, there was so much going on in 43 minutes of wrestling. I mean, there was so much going on. When we talk about the match itself, there were so many different types of eliminations. Like, it wasn't just, like, a pin here, a submission there. I mean, there was all kinds of eliminations there was all kinds of stories being told. So it was really, like, not only was it the match of the night, but I don't think it really had much competition. That's how good it was.
I would go as far as to say, for me, I'm just talking about purely, I mean, my excitement leading up to the match, there have been more matches I've been more excited for leading up to, for sure. But I'm just talking excitement during a match and everything. I haven't had that kind of like, oh my God, who will win, like, back and forth things since, you know what, actually, of being completely lost in a match and not knowing who will win, I would say all the way back to Shawn Michaels as The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25.
There you go. That's a good.
Five years of not being that in suspense for a match.
I think there's one thing that made this match. If there's like one, if I can scratch one, like not even a small point, not even 0.5 out of the point, but just remove a little bit from it, was that on Friday SmackDown, they made this weird announcement that like anyone on Team Cena is going to get fired, like if they lose. And I think that telegraphed that Team Cena was winning. Because there's no way, come on, like in what world, you know, would you think that Cena's going to get fired and Ziggler and Big Show? And like, I think
the announcement did say Cena would not be fired. The members of Team Cena would be fired, but not Cena himself.
Yeah, which again, like it just still didn't seem like it would happen. It didn't seem like realistic.
There's enough people who've been fired just to come back miraculously when, you know, if this man has a crazy whim or some stockholder has a crazy whim. Like,
let me rephrase it. Story-wise, I know they could have gotten fired and rehired, but there was no way that they were going to go through the whole storyline of being fired and stay fired. Does that make any sense? Yeah. So, like, for that reason, since I know that they can't stay with a story that long, I knew that they weren't going to lose.
It was a bit of painting into a corner. Yeah. And I agree that it was wrong. I mean, I was completely convinced that Team Authority was going to win, and I even said that. And then one of my friends is like, "Oh, they announced that they were going to fire all the members of Team Cena, so they can't lose."
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
And so I was like, "They did?"
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Yeah, they did it on SmackDown." And I was like, "Oh, I don't always watch SmackDown."
Yeah, well, so
that's
and
a weird place for them to even add that stipulation and everything. Like, I get it, like, you should be watching all of it, but, like, they have to know that, like, with the quality that they've been running SmackDown, that it's basically just a Raw show, because they're putting everything into that 3 hours, and they're not putting much into the SmackDown hours. So if there's anyone listening, work on your SmackDown back to those, you know, 2000 to 2005 years. Get it to be that ace show.
The SmackDown 6.
SmackDown 6.
Yeah, SmackDown 6.
Yeah.
But was it 6 or 7? Pretty sure it was 6.
I don't know. I like SmackDown still, but I mean, it's just very convincingly the B show, when it used to be like you could watch either show and be impressed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it used to be that SmackDown, when they had like the true brand split, and you had Raw pay-per-views and SmackDown pay-per-views, I wasn't disappointed to see a SmackDown pay-per-view. Like SmackDown
was the fast-paced WCW, you know, cruiserweight type wrestling, and Raw was kind of like the big sluggish Haas wrestling. Yeah, that was kind of like the initial separation of the two, which I kind of hope that they would have kept that separation.
If you would have told me that SmackDown was having a pay-per-view just SmackDown, I'd be like, nope, not even on the network.
Not even for $9.99.
Not even for $9.99. I'm not doing it.
But we'll watch the hell out of NXT.
Yes, I will watch the hell out of NXT. But back to Survivor Series, the excitement during this match, just off the chain, absolutely intense emotion, like running the entire thing. And I mean, it involved a character being propelled to heights that he belonged at for a long time, and I'm hoping that they keep that steam. I hope that he has a major match.
It seems like we're going there.
I'm sad that it's Ziggler Cena. I mean, I get that Cena can do a lot, or not Ziggler Cena, that it's Rollins versus Cena at TLC in that tables match. I get that Cena can do a lot for Rollins by being his opponent.
Yeah.
But good God, the idea of a ladder match of Rollins versus Ziggler.
Oh yeah,
that's so tempting. Mouth-watering. Mouth-watering match.
Yeah. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. So, my favorite wrestler currently in the business was done a grave injustice at Survivor Series. I still liked the match. I still liked the show, but R.I.P. Stardust with the Cosmic Key. Long live Stardust without the Cosmic Key. And hopefully he reclaims it or finds single success, or they do actually something with him going forward, because Stardust deserves so much more. You know Stardust is in Pokemon, right?
I do know that. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that. I think you should send that to Botchmania, but
I was just rolling on. Maybe I will. Maybe I will after this
you
podcast.
You should, because I think he would enjoy that Photoshop.
I cracked up so damn hard when I found Stardust on the beach, and I was like, ooh, cut Stardust right into the match.
Yeah.
The match was a tag team match. It was a kind of Survivor Series tag team match, but they didn't do it the way that they did in 88, which I was a little disappointed by. I was hoping it would be more like the 1988 one,
right?
With multiple eliminations.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it was just one go fatal four way tag match.
Yeah.
It was Miz and Damian Mizdow versus defending champions Golden Stardust, the Usos and Los Matadores with El Torito. Did anyone else notice that El Torito, like, nearly died during this match?
I kind of. Oh, I'm not too concerned about El Torito. Like, you know, if anything ever happens to him, I'm very indifferent to him.
Well,
did seem like he was about to die in that spot.
When it comes to somebody nearly shattering their neck, I don't care if it's Heath Slater. Like, I'm gonna have some concern. Like, I don't want people to just die. Like,
yeah.
Dear God, like that match went so south. And the thing that was bad about it was, like, Cody went and saw that it was going bad, and then put himself in a bad way, caught him, or not Cody, Stardust, they're not the same person, we can't confirm or deny that, but saw that it was going a bad way, and ended up helping catch him. Like, you saw him, like, cradling his head as he right. caught him, as he did this, like, sabot over the top rope, and saved him from, like, breaking his neck. Miz continued his streak of not fucking catching people who do dives outside of the ring by just laying on his back and being there. And I am a Miz fan. I like the Miz, but God damn it, he never fucking catches people. He just always lets them just splatter themselves on shit. So, Miz, while you're in those Hollywood training sessions, learn to catch.
Seriously. Just a session or two.
Just one of, like, how to be a buddy guy. Sure that Tyson Kidd could teach you it in the dungeon or something.
Can we all agree that the Miz and Damian Mizdow gimmick is, like, way too good and should just stay longer? Like, I don't like that we already have, like, the seeds of dissension, like, in it.
You know what? I liked the Mizdow gimmick before he became a, I don't even know what it is, like a tatami marionette or of some sort. To
yeah, like he has to,
like,
mimic everything.
We're like he's, like, voodoo cursed to, like, take the damage that Miz has. Like, I liked it when they first introduced it, that he would, like, jump in, stunt double, and he would, like, take a shot, and then Miz would, like, capitalize on his buddy getting, like, knocked out and, like, take the win.
Yeah.
And I love when he shadows Miz's moves, like,
yeah.
Like, he's researching his role as his stunt double, to, mm-hmm. so that, like, he does the headlock on the outside.
He's, like, he's a method actor.
And everything. Yeah, he's a method actor. I love that. But when they did that bit last month where Sheamus bro-kicked Miz, and Mizdow, like, flew backwards as if he had just been bro-kicked, that was the point where I'm like, ugh, I'm done with the Mizdow thing. But that shows that I'm not necessarily in touch with, like, the greater WWE universe, because it has never been bigger. Mizdow is
over. Yeah, like, it was apparent when the match ended, and they had the titles. Actually, no, didn't Miz have both titles?
Both titles.
Yeah, so he had both titles holding them in each hand, and he was in one turnbuckle. Mizdow was on the other one without the titles. He was just shadowing.
Still holding
them. Still holding them, right, like the invisible titles. And Miz would put his hands up. The crowd would boo. He put his hands down. Mizdow would then, you know, put his hands up, and the crowd would cheer. Yeah. And it's a heel team. Like, it's a heel tag team. It's nothing but a heel tag team. Like, they love the Miz, which is kind of what happened.
They love Mizdow.
Yeah, they love Mizdow. It's kind of like what happened with Cesaro and Jack Swagger when they were in the Real Americans.
Mm-hmm.
People love Cesaro by default. Like, they love them. They couldn't stand Coulter, they couldn't stand Swagger, but they love Cesaro. So we're in the same position right now, except it's on purpose this time. It's not happening organically.
I really hope that Miz continues to carry both belts.
Mm-hmm.
At all times, and that, like,
I think,
and that Mizdow carries, like, the kids, like, little crappy Kmart belts. That would give me endless joy if
stunt belts. I think that he's carrying. No, he's carrying stunt belts now. Basically, he's carrying his own set of belts.
So there's four belts. Come out with the belts. Okay.
Yeah, there's four belts now. Like, there's. Miz is carrying the two belts, and then Mizdow is carrying two other belts.
Oh, that's going to get so confusing.
It's equally hilarious to me. I think it's just as funny.
That's pretty funny. the actual course of the match, besides Torito nearly killing himself, there wasn't that much super memorable throughout it. I mean, it was your typical... You know, swoop for the victory. I like that you have that little shades. You alluded to him earlier and everything of Mizdow not necessarily just being Miz's puppet, because he tagged mm-hmm. himself in and he stole the win and all that from his own partner. But at the same time, it was good. I mean, I would probably say like 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I mean. I think 3 out of 5. Let's say 3.5, only because I like where they, like, if there was anyone here who should have won, besides Goldust and Stardust retaining, it was the Mizdow. So I'll give it a 3.5 myself.
Yeah, I think my only thing against it, and I mean, this is Stardust Mark speaking,
yeah,
minor Goldust Mark speaking, but I didn't think Golden Stardust got enough time with the belts to really do something with them. Like,
yeah, and you're right about that. But at the same time, I don't think Goldust and Stardust need the belts.
They don't need the belts. They need time to talk. Is what I don't get is that we got 3 hours of Raw each week, three crowded hours of Raw that need to be filled with time, but you have Golden Stardust, crazy talkers who are going to give you, like, if not a great vignette or promo, they're going to mm-hmm. give you a weird, memorable promo that you're going to be like, what the fuck were they just talking about? Like, what
right.
the hell? And then you've got New Day just debuted, and they're a preacher gimmick, like,
yeah,
or at least, like, a motivational speaker gimmick, if not preacher.
Yeah.
And they don't get time to shoot a promo. So I'm not really understanding the idea of them not having promo time for these characters who could talk and do a lot when you've got to fill your time with all this other stuff.
Yeah, especially when you have people like, let's say, what's his name? Ryback doing a promo. And it's like, no, please don't.
don't like talk. Ryback. I'll talk more about Ryback when we get to his match, but I do like Ryback. I like Ryback a lot more than people who, like, shoot on people and call them steroid guy and hateful stuff.
That sounds like a very specific person right now.
Fuck that guy. He didn't shake my hand.
There's the feud right there. There's the source.
CM Punk.
Oh, Charlie.
Oh, Phil. No, but, the following match was a really good, impressive, and somewhat lengthy Survivor Series match of two divas teams. They need to go back to the term women. Like, they can be the WWE divas and the WWE superstars, but like end of the day, it's like wrestlers, men, women, like wrestlers.
Divas just makes it sound like they don't wrestle.
Divas makes it sound like they don't wrestle. Exactly.
Yeah. Like exactly. It sounds like they sound like
they
sound like
cheerleaders. They sound like
or like managers,
showgirls or something. Like,
yeah.
You don't sound like
Candy.
Yes.
That's what I think of when I hear Diva. Candy.
So like I just think there's so much more like the divas.
There is like one thing I'll admit.
Even if they don't want to change the name from just Divas for the Divas Championship, we need a new belt that's not a goddamn butterfly.
Yeah, and we'll get to that when we talk about the actual Divas Championship. The one thing I will say.
Oh, yeah, this wasn't for the Divas title, was it?
No, it was just like four. It was weird because it was just like beef that I guess Team Fox had with Team Paige, and they just like put them all together to, you know, settle their differences. That being said,
up at all, but
yeah, exactly. It was just it happened, and whatever. The one thing I'll give them though, the one thing if WWE should be given credit for one thing, I think this is the first time in a long time, where their Divas Women's Wrestling Division, whatever you want to call it, has the most defined characters. By that I mean that you can look at each individual diva and you know exactly who they are, both name wise, personality wise, moveset wise. Like they're all very different. Even the ones that are similar are still very different. Like you don't have the problem like you had with like Tori and Sable and like Stacey Keibler, like when they there was like an era of WWE women's wrestling where it was like mostly blondes.
I think skipping over the like 2000 2003 because in that time you did have Tori Sable and Stacey Keibler.
But that was 10 years ago. That's what I'm trying to say.
You're just talking about the first time in a long time. I thought you said this is the most defined ever.
I think
when you had Jazz, Ivory, Lita, Trish.
Yeah, that's like, the last time. Yeah, I think I would compare that era with this one, except
Molly Hall is the greatest fucking women's wrestler of all time.
That
in
never
my
got
opinion.
Hers.
And what?
And never got hers. Just
and never got hers. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Criminally underrated.
Like she had I think a good women's title run and she was really cool, but I mean like the mixture of being like Mighty Molly and like then like I think she was like corporate style Molly or mm-hmm. was she in like Right to Censor or something?
Yeah, she was in Right to Censor.
And then a few other spins and everything, and then she came back I think for like the Diva big match at like WrestleMania 25 just to get like unglamorously kind of like thrown out by Santina. But
yeah.
But But
thanks for reminding me about the Santina thing.
Sorry, that'll haunt you in your nightmares.
Yeah.
But I loved Molly Holly and I think that there was a lot of depth then, but I do appreciate that there's a lot of depth now.
As compared to
characters.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was really weird though. I mean, it was a Team Fox domination. Actually, it was a Team Fox shutout over Team
Paige. Yeah, because Paige was the last one standing when there were still, what, four on the other side?
Yeah.
Or was it, yeah.
Yeah, it was four. It was a 4-on-4 match.
Which was really like a, it was foreshadowing to the main event, really.
Ooh, interesting.
Right?
what I thought was weird was, I don't know if maybe they always do it like this way, but I thought it was kind of an odd bit of, like, sexual pandering almost. Every single pin that entire match had a camera shot just like straight into their spread legs, like as they pinned every single one. Emma did the I don't remember what she calls it, but it was Brian Danielson's cattle mutilation when he was in ROH. What does Emma call it?
The Emma Lock.
Is it Emma Lock?
Mm-hmm. Emma Lock.
All her fucking moves are Emma something.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's what. Like, there's Emma Lock.
Emma-lution.
Emma-lution. Emma, like, leg kick or whatever the hell it is. Like, she did that and like that, but, like, legs, like, spread, which you wouldn't normally do while you're in that move. And, like, right. Alicia did, like, a pin, legs, like, totally spread. Like, it was just really weird. Like, I kept seeing it, and I'm like, why that shot every single time? Like,
in fairness, there has been times where males have done certain pins that where their legs were spread for no reason, and I was like, can we please get to another shot? So,
in fairness, that does happen, and I mean, like, I'm not bothered by it by any means, but when four different women score four different pins on the same team and
right.
all do it every single one, it just made me like kind of raise an eyebrow. Yeah. Like,
oh, like, I'll have to rewatch
was this
it.
Planned or did they just happen?
Yeah.
Or did they just happen to all pin that way or something? And I just never noticed it. But
yeah, I'll have to rewatch it and pay attention to, like, let's say the traditional Survivor Series match at the end, and then this one, mm-hmm. and sort of see like if I see it too. And that probably means that I'll see it because yeah.
And I didn't like that Summer Rae's trying to be Ms. Dow to Paige. Like, I didn't understand that at all.
Right. Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah,
I don't know where that came from.
She did her, like, rampage knees in the corner and then leaned back and did, like, a weird scream. And did you see that? Oh, I saw it. You're an idiot. like, Paige
just... I hate you!
Paige just calling her team idiots the entire thing.
Yeah.
I hate you. But Naomi, I think there's a lot of room. Like, there needs to be something exciting done with the Divas division, and I mean, maybe Nikki Bella can be an interesting champion. Like, I want to see like a strong run with like a bunch of different contenders and everything, and maybe Nikki Bella can have some really good matches on there. I heard she cut some pretty good promos recently, so maybe they'll do something with that. But I've always been a big fan of Alicia Fox. I think not only is she like the most beautiful diva on the roster, but I think she is a very good wrestler. She's got some crazy kicks.
Yeah,
her kick is sharp, man.
You know what the thing? Every time I see Alicia Fox, and this is not like a racist thing or anything, is just, her body type reminds me a lot of like Booker T. Like her legs. And the way she moves around the ring, he reminds me a lot of Booker T.
I wouldn't call that racist.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know.
That's just, she's a wrestler like another wrestler.
But, yeah, but, you know, like, someone's probably going to be like, is it because she's black? But, but like, her body type
is very similar. You wouldn't say Naomi or Jazz are like Booker T.
No,
like,
oh, God, no.
Like,
no.
Like, no, like. Like,
yeah,
Alicia's got long-ass legs, and she does that crazy-ass kick, man.
Yeah, and she
reminds actually, Alicia does a scissor kick.
Yeah.
No, there's plenty of reason to compare her to Booker T.
Yeah, Booker, her, like, watch Booker T, like, just go watch, like, a 2002, 2004 Booker T match, and then go watch, like, Alicia Fox in, like, a singles match, and you'll see what I'm talking about, especially, and I think it's the body type. They have, similar body type.
If you're gonna be compared to a wrestler and everything, you'd want to be compared to like a Booker T. Booker T was always really good. Like, we're years past when he was just like the Black Rock that WCW had. Like,
right.
And he was
arguably like, you know, one of the better WCW wrestlers that came
of the imports,
during that transition.
Of the imports that WCW made themselves.
Yeah.
I would put Booker very top. I would put him above Sting. I respect him, and I like his match more than I ever liked Sting stuff.
Oh, yeah, because Sting wasn't, nearly as technically sound.
Head and shoulders over Goldberg. I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, did you watch the Goldberg portion of the Monday Night War? Where they openly state that he was green and just worthless in the ring?
we put him in a match with Steven Regal, and Steven Regal made him look like shit.
And even Goldberg himself mentions it, like, I wasn't really a wrestler, like, I wasn't ready.
I'm Joe Goldberg, I talk like this in real life. Who's next? Welcome to my show!
Wait, is that his voice? Like, I never noticed that.
Goldberg sounds like Ray Romano, like, in his regular non-promo talking voice.
I was sent down to Atlanta, and I didn't like the way that they booked me in the match. I didn't think that they should have had me lose. Especially, they had me get hit with a taser. It was the weirdest thing.
I don't know what's like, the best here. I don't know if it's the fact that you can do a really good Ray Romano, or that Bill Goldberg sounds like Ray Romano.
I swear to God, look up a video of, like, Goldberg talking in a straight interview, and he sounds on the money.
Because like, I know exactly like where
Ray,
I want to look.
Like, Ray Romano and Kermit the Frog had a baby or something, and that baby, like, took steroids and became Bill Goldberg.
That's funny.
I'm not saying that Bill Goldberg took steroids. I don't know that.
All right, Phil.
But he probably took steroids.
Steroid guy.
You know what? No, I'm not even going to talk about that yet.
Anyway, so next match.
The next match was an unbelievable clusterfuck, in my opinion.
It was.
Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose just devolved into something. This match was just a 13-minute commercial for TLC.
Buy
TLC, because that's where we're going to do this.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, I wasn't mad at it, but I was disappointed at it. The fact that it was such an obvious, you know. And again, this is why I call this, like, the one-match pay-per-view, because, like, really, the last match made every other match just pale, even if there was any good ones. Which I think you could argue there was two good matches in the whole pay-per-view.
I mean, people have been throwing this at WWE that Survivor Series, or not Survivor Series, that SummerSlam was banked only on Cena versus Lesnar. I would disagree. I thought SummerSlam was an excellent show, top to bottom.
SummerSlam was really good. What are people talking about?
people threw the same thing, that Night of Champions was only about the rematch. I would disagree. There's a lot of great matches there, too. Then they threw that.
Yeah, hold on. Let me. I have to. Rafa Nam versus Cesaro, Ziggler versus Miz, Paige versus AJ, Rusev versus Swagger, Rollins versus Ambrose. Oh, the match that didn't happen. Oh, Bray Wyatt versus Jericho, really? Like, they were saying that?
Exactly.
Wow. Roman Reigns versus Orton. Yeah, SummerSlam had,
five good matches. SummerSlam was fantastic. And then they did the same thing at Night of Champions and everything, and I'm like, hello, Jericho versus Orton here? Like, all sorts of great stuff. And this is the first time that I can really go, yeah, because the other matches weren't great. They had some memorable moments. I would probably say the second best match after the major Team Authority, Team Cena Survivor Series match. I would say the second best match is probably the women's Survivor Series match. Yeah. Even though it was a shutout, it was like a good shutout. But Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose was just thing. I really like Bray's, when Bray's trying to mess with a face or whoever he's fighting.
Like get in their head.
Cause Bray's an interesting character in the fact that he's not really a face and not really a heel. Cause like he has so many face spots. Like he's clearly a bad guy. Like he interferes in matches. He attacks people. He's creepy. But at the same time, like he does like the name the city.
The Foley pop.
Yeah. And that's such a face move. And I mean, when the lights go out and they have like, the people use their cell phones to do the lights. That's such a face move. Like, it's hard to really understand what's going on with Bray Wyatt. And I know that probably drives like an old school fan like JR absolutely insane.
Oh, it does.
Like probably like just like blows his mind and everything. Like, you're not a face. You're not a heel.
What are you? My God.
You don't make sense. But I sit there in confusion at that, but I love, and he did the same thing with Cena. Like, he does this, hit me, and it's not in, like, a masochist way, it's not in, that he likes to be hurt. He just likes to, his character likes to, like, pervert the good guy by making them
right.
Something atrocious and everything. And Cena, being Cena, like, didn't give in to that and, you know, just beat him with, you know, whatever.
Well, he didn't give in fully, but he still did. He still, like, used the chair against the Wyatt family, per se,
yeah,
in that one
true.
Match, which was always, like, a weird thing that no one ever, like, talked about.
True. But I mean, Dean, being Dean, is just going to come straight at you and, like, do
kill
too
you.
Much. Like,
yeah.
Too much. But the point where I'm talking about that this was just a long commercial for TLC was
the table spot
that he, not even a table spot, was that he puts a table like on top of Bray instead of like beating him with all this crap and throwing it all on top of him and then like setting up a table and putting him on the table so that he can go onto the ladder and jump off like you would expect to be like a huge closeout spot.
Right.
Was that he did all that, and then he, like, buries Bray in debris, and, like, Bray even had to, like, kind of break character because of the way he was just wildly throwing, like, chairs and stuff in there, and Bray, like, unconscious under the table, had to, like, pull his arm in under the table just because of all this crap throwing at him.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he climbed the ladder just to, like, raise his hands for a spot, because you know when they, like, cut to promo, like, in between the two and took it off camera, that the live audience just saw him, like, climb down off the ladder and walk away, like...
Right.
There was no reason to put a ladder into the ring and climb up. No, nobody does that just so people can see them, like, oh, he's on the ladder.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Unless there's a spot.
exactly, like...
Was that Ray Romano again?
This is our guest star, Goldberg. Get some hits. We got Goldberg on the podcast today.
All right, guys.
But damn you. It just seemed too much of like a commercial bit. Like it didn't seem organic. Like if he wanted to, you know, bring absolute pain to Bray Wyatt, he could have done that and then just sort of like brought a tape, a ladder out, and then thrown the ladder on him too, and then just walked out as he just left him in a pile of debris. And then they're all like, well, guess what? There's going to be a TLC match. But instead, it just looked like
Bray.
A confusing commercial. It's like, oh, okay.
Bray Wyatt should have known better than to fuck with the Titty Master. That's all there is.
So, you've mentioned this before.
Me? Just me? Like, the internet.
I've seen it on the internet. I do not know the Titty Master story. Like, what is it? Did he, like, just feel up some girl at a house show or something?
No. So, what happened was, and there's photographic evidence of this, and you have it that I gave it to you. Basically, what happened was during...
Just send it to me? Let me look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Dean Ambrose, during a house show, had the words Titty and Master on his wrists, written, right, on his tape. Like, one of them is clearly marked Titty.
Oh, that
and
does say Titty.
and the other one said Master, right? So what ended up happening was, is that people in Reddit saw that picture and just started calling him the Titty Master Dean Ambrose. Fast forward to a month or so later, during a live WWE event, at Raw, televised Raw, and there's pictures of this everywhere, when he was coming in with the Shield, there was a kid holding a sign that said "Titty," you know, the titty, fear the Titty Master or something like that. And I mean,
like a legitimate kid,
like some, you
a
know,
child,
some,
like
some,
10 and 10 and
some,
under,
some teenager probably
okay.
at most. Basically, yeah. So the next
I just think it would be funnier if like a 7-year-old Cena fan like just had Titty Master like on the sign, but like didn't understand it.
I would like to find that second picture, but actually there is a child picture. Hold on, I'll send it to you. But anyway, this is probably going to be the picture for our podcast, by the way. Just letting you know. So basically, the nickname stuck, right, for a while. And then he went on an interview. I can't remember where the interview was. And they asked him about it. And he said he didn't understand where the internet got it. You know, like, he doesn't know what the internet is talking about. He doesn't hang around the internet, blah, blah, blah. Basically trying to, like, you know, sweep it under the carpet.
I'm 27, but I don't know what the internet is.
Like, yeah, exactly. And I mean, sure, yeah. Dean. Look at the picture that I sent you from. That's clearly him and a child. So, yeah.
No, that doesn't look like a child. That looks like a oddly shaped adult.
Well, either way,
just a small person.
Either way, that says Titty Master, and he's clearly
get your tits
familiar.
Out, Ambrose. And he's like, yay.
He's signing it.
It also looks like they caught him in a lobby of a hotel, and he like was just out partying for like 7 hours straight.
In fairness, it is Dean Ambrose.
In fairness, it is Dean Ambrose, and he's a party guy, like for sure. Like, I think him and Roman Reigns and the Usos are pretty much the only like partiers of like the current crop of WWE guys. They're the only ones who could keep up with a Chris Jericho.
I love that picture so much. That might just become my iPhone background. anyway, so next match.
The next match was almost blink and you miss it.
2 minutes and 56 seconds of a match, quote unquote.
Really, you should have blinked and missed it. So
can we just not talk about Adam Rose and the Bunny? Can we just like ignore it?
I don't think that's fair to our listeners to ignore Adam Rose and the Bunny.
Fuck this match. Fuck Adam Rose and the Bunny. Well, actually, fuck the Bunny, because I actually like Adam Rose still. Fuck Slater Gator, whatever that means. What does Slater Gator mean? I don't get it.
You know what's funny to me? I hate the Bunny, and I hate Adam Rose. But you still like Adam Rose? Like,
I still like Adam Rose.
Adam Rose day one. Like, as soon as he came out, I hated him.
Like,
hate that gimmick.
Like, the gimmick, it would work better if he was a heel, obviously. Like, the gimmick is, he's supposed to be a heel. I don't know why he's still a face, because that's clearly a heel gimmick.
But it's party time.
But it's party time.
All the time.
And the bunny thing, but I don't know.
All the time.
No. We're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Adam Rose only had his short time in the sun purely because that's a really, really catchy beat that they gave him for his theme song.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't think they gave it to... Actually, regarding that, I was listening to the Bray... Did you listen to the Bray Wyatt interview that Stone Cold did?
No.
They actually spoke about theme songs and other things about character development and all that.
Oh my god, was that originally Bray Wyatt's theme song?
No, no. Shut up. They apparently... So apparently... The way Bray Wyatt describes it in that podcast, and it's out of character, completely out of character.
Good. That's how they should be on a podcast. Yeah. Like, I don't like when people do podcasts in character. Like, I did hear the one where Chris Jericho was doing a podcast and he was having, like, call-ins.
Mm-hmm.
And Bray Wyatt called in and, like, kayfabes, set up for the match, like, for promotion and everything like that in the middle of the podcast, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, like, it's something that would work in the 80s, but, like, now it just doesn't work.
Too hokey. Like, he's calling in. What?
Like, he has a phone? What? Anyway.
Bray Wyatt has a phone? In that shack?
Like, he strikes me as a BlackBerry type of guy.
I honestly think that Bray Wyatt would just, like, try to make a phone call on a snail, like he was in
One
Piece or something. Like,
that One Piece style. Oh, can he just teleport, though? Like, why would he need to call you? Like,
wait, 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 wait. wait. Is it like kayfabe in character that Bray Wyatt can teleport? Where is this?
Well, don't you remember on the match? Shit, what was the match? Where he just appeared from the lantern or whatever. Like,
oh, are you talking about when he appeared in Hell in a Cell?
Hell in a Cell. And before that, he did something else, and I can't remember right now. I have to rewatch
the match. But he was using the power of video editing.
No.
I'm already in the ring. Like.
No, yeah, he can teleport, because I remember in, I think it was with Dean Ambrose, where he was talking to him, the lights go out for like 2 seconds, and then he appeared behind him. Like, he teleported behind him, and Dean Ambrose is like, what the fuck?
So we're taking the, like, classic Undertaker Sting spot, and we're just, like, full on saying that those three can teleport.
Yes. That's my take on it. They teleport. They know instant transmission.
What kind of black hell is, like, what?
Hey, that's what they're presenting me.
Dude, I don't know if I can talk wrestling on this podcast with you anymore. You have just shattered my world by introducing the thought that perhaps professional wrestlers can teleport. Like,
yeah.
Like, next you're gonna tell me that you honestly think that Kane, like, himself, through his own force of will, summons flames from
that's the whole gimmick, right? Like, obviously he doesn't. I know it's pyrotechnics, but the gimmick is obviously that he can summon fire.
You see, I don't know, like, me, even the first time I saw Kane, I didn't think Kane was the one, like, throwing the flames out of there, like...
Right.
I mean, I don't think that Batista's machine gun arms can really shoot out 75.
See, that's the one I don't get, like, because he doesn't have superpowers, but he shoots fireworks.
I'm not going to lie, Batista's entrance is the coolest entrance in the history of wrestling. Put that down on the books. Cyan's opinion is that Batista has the coolest entrance ever in wrestling.
Really?
The machine gun, the big stomp, the rope shake roar homage to Ultimate Warrior, that whole thing. Like, every single time I did create a wrestler in a WWE game, it was just like, copy paste, Batista, boom. Like, maybe I would change it just for the part where he got into the ring. Rather than doing Batista's run up the stairs, I would do Brock Lesnar's big jump onto there.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because Brock Lesnar's jump onto the apron is beastly, like...
Especially for a guy his size. Because, like, you know, when someone like Rey Mysterio or someone like that would, like, jump to the ring, you're like, oh, that's adorable. Yeah, that's adorable. But, like, when it's Brock, you're like, oh, shit, the ring just moved.
Or conversely, it would be, like, Sin Cara, and you're all like, oh, I really believe that he just vaulted 7 feet into the...
Anyway, the point that I was going with all of that, with Bray Wyatt teleporting into Chris Jericho's thing, was that when he was on the podcast with Stone Cold Steve Austin, he was talking about how they were put in a room, and they were in line, basically, at the NXT developmental... And they had to choose their music from a databank of music. Like, they had all these songs or whatever. And they're in a line, right? And Bray was telling Stone Cold that he's like, when he was sitting there, he's like, I'm not going to pick something generic. Because, like, you can tell that, like, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and what's-his-face, they all chose generic as music. Like, the music that they have playing right now, they chose it, right? Mm-hmm. When they were down there, because they knew, like, at some point there would be singles wrestlers. So
see, that's shocking to me, because that's a huge change from the way it used to be. Because I know Randy Orton when he had the song Before Voices.
Yeah, the Hey, Nothing You Can Say, that one.
Yeah, that one. He hated that song.
Right, so obviously he didn't pick it, but now they get to pick it. Weird. And basically Bray Wyatt, being Bray Wyatt, because, you know, he's very in love with, like, the character he's crafted, and, like, he went on great detail as
well.
To,
he's,
like,
one of the few people who has, like, built his own character. Like,
mm-hmm. And basically he was saying that he told the person who was in charge of, like, that particular department or whatever it's called, he was like, I'm not leaving until I find my song. And so I'm gonna be at the end of the line because I'm not gonna like he didn't want to make people wait, so he waited until he was the very last one, and he spent a good amount of hours in there trying to find a song until he found when he found the song Live in Fear or whatever it's called, it was actually instrumental. There was no lyrics. It was just a doom 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 doom, just the beat. And he said that as soon as he heard that bass line. And apparently, he took the song, immediately went to the NXT ring and had them play the song on the speakers, and he walked to the beat. And he said that he knew right there that that was the theme song
that's
he was
going to use.
So you can tell that he's very invested in his character, whereas other people just like would go in, 5 minutes out, they would have a song.
You see, for Bray, I saw so much in him. From even the Husky Harris days. I was, like, absolutely all about Husky Harris. But, like, there was... It was obvious in that, like, even though, like, he had a good look and he had great matches and everything, that Husky Harris was never going to be a marquee name. Like,
no.
He was never going to go there as Husky Harris. But when he came back and, like, people were telling me, I was like, God, I miss Husky Harris. Like, what happened to that guy? And people are like, oh, he's in NXT now. I'm like, that sucks and everything. It's like, nah, he's awesome.
He's got this gimmick.
He's got this big beard and he's wearing Hawaiian shirts and he laughs while sitting in a rocking chair as two dudes beat people up. And I'm like, that sounds fucking awful. And then I just watched like one match and he wasn't even in the match. It was just like literally him sitting there. But I was so mesmerized by the way that he played it. And it's very, like, very cultish, that, and I mean, that's what the gimmick is, but he does it so well, and you can see that, like, that's the character he was meant to play.
Yeah, it's based on, obviously, on Charles Manson. Like, he performed it based on Charles Manson. The chair thing was an accident. Basically, he was injured, when they had him join the Luke Harper and,
Eric Rowan.
Eric Rowan. Basically, he got injured, so he had to. He couldn't do moves, and he's like, "Well, I still want to be out there somehow." So he came up with the chair gimmick, you know, so he would be out there sitting, and you know, just being creepy, and like that made him look like this cult leader that you know just had his minions do things for him. So it worked out in the end. He actually says that him being injured was the best thing that happened to the gimmick because he was able to develop that part.
Nice.
You know, like the sitting down, you know, being kind of like a manager heel while being still a wrestler. And then he, you know, the name Bray came from like a friend of his that was like really quiet and really, really creepy.
Hey, man.
And then Wyatt came from Wyatt Earp because he loves his Westerns.
Nice.
I don't know where the rest of this stuff came. But it was a really good interview, and I think you should probably give it a read because he's very, very passionate about his,
One thing, I mean, character. Here's something that'll tell you a lot about Bray Wyatt and how much he cares and how hard he works on it. So not only is there that from that interview, but Vince McMahon recently did an interview that was on the WWE Network. And he said that a lot of the guys back there, like, don't seem to be as aggressively going for the top spot as in, like, the Attitude Era. But he named... three guys that are really going for it. And he named Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt. He only named those three as, like, the guys.
Wow.
So that really shows you that, like, if Vince McMahon's going, like, guys that I think are really impressive and really working hard, these three, blah, 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 like, this whole crop, and I mean, kind of pisses me off that, like, he didn't say Cody, like, but...
Jesus.
But I mean, I knew from tons and tons of interviews that, like, Vince does not like Cody very much. Like, I think that's just, like, Vince, like, has, like, 30 years of hatred against Dusty, like, under his belt that's always going to hold Dustin and Cody back from being, like, a major, major player and keep them perpetually at the mid-card, which is deplorable. Yeah. But I think that one day, like, he'll go past that because, I mean, Cody's just the best guy on the roster.
So I think we spent about more time talking about Bray Wyatt and Adam Rose than the actual match for Nikki Bella and AJ Lee was.
I like that we completely stopped talking about Adam Rose and went back to Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
But back on that, you asked about what is Slater Gator?
Yeah, what is Slater Gator?
Slater Gator is obviously Heath Slater, and Titus O'Neil's nickname is the Gator, because he played for Florida. Florida Gator.
Oh, that's what it is.
So that's all it is.
Because when I think of him, I think of
they would
at
times have Hornswoggle, and I don't understand why they didn't have Hornswoggle along with them, but Hornswoggle was the Gator, and he would just dress up like a little tiny lizard. Like, he was fighting against El Torito in that stupid lizard costume for a while. That was the whole setup for their WLC match. Do you remember that?
Oh, is that what? Okay.
That was the whole setup for the WLC. And I mean, it's called midget wrestling, but I mean, that's the actual term of it. It's not like a derogatory thing. But, because nobody wants to see little people wrestling. It's like midget wrestling. Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I was really surprised because I thought that was going to be, like, the worst thing ever. I was like, they've got, like, a little ladder, and they're going to climb it and win the WLC match. Like, this sounds horribly offensive, and that it's going to be a terrible match. But I was really impressed with how good of a wrestler Hornswoggle can be, like, when he's actually seriously doing stuff. Yeah. And, I mean, I knew El Torito can do, like, weird flips and everything, but, like, that was a cool match. Whoever named it WLC is also a... evil genius, but
yeah, that was actually pretty good.
but yeah, so that's where Slater Gator came from. And I hate all four people involved in Bunny, Heath Slater, and Titus O'Neil's match. So
yeah,
that's enough of that. But Nikki Bella, Brie Bella, AJ Lee,
mm-hmm.
Kiss of Death, the KOD version 2.
Calling back the
WrestleMania.
Yeah, WrestleMania she was with Daniel Bryan.
Exactly off of that. She kissed Daniel. Daniel took a big hit. Daniel got pinned, lost the title. Boom, match over. She gets kissed. Nikki does the big rack attack, which still cracks me up as the name for the move.
What is it called?
The rack attack.
Is it really?
Yeah, because she puts you in a torture rack and then drops the backbreaker and
right.
and does the
okay.
pin, but she also has fake boobs, so rack attack.
Gotcha. Womp womp.
Yeah. It's
oh
not
my
great.
Goodness. Yeah.
It's slightly better than the page turner for fucking Paige's stupid.
I like
page turner
like
is
that.
A stupid ass name. Rampage is an awesome name.
No.
Turner is a stupid name.
No, because Rampage, like, to me, that's kind of rapey.
Rampage is rapey? Like,
yeah, because, you know, it says Rampage, because you're going to ram her. Like,
yeah,
I don't
but she
like
does
that.
It. She does
it. No, but
she
it's still, the like, the name.
No, I would have respected you more if you would have said Rampage makes you think of, like, a giant lizard and a giant gorilla eating a town or something like that. Then I could be like, oh yeah, Rampage, I liked that game too when I was, you know, 4. But,
that's
but,
funny.
But to throw that out, I honestly, when you started saying rapey, I was like, oh my god, did Quentin Jackson, like, rape somebody? Like, like the UFC fighter? Like,
I wouldn't doubt it, but anyway.
Wow. false allegations on the Cyan Enriquin podcast.
right, but, slander.
Gosh, at least he didn't wait 32 years to throw that out there, but...
Right? Boom.
Drop it. No, but yeah.
Oh, shit.
AJ Lee, I'm hoping that they have something more following this, like a follow-up match that's an actual serious contest between them. I mean, AJ did come out and drop that, you know, great promo afterwards, you know, unfortunately for you, talent's not sexually transmitted.
Oh, God, I love that line.
Which
so
was
much.
A great line. And I loved the comment that somebody sent to me on Twitter. They said, like, yeah, of course talent's not sexually transmitted. Otherwise, AJ's husband would have built us one hell of a Divas division. Because before he got married, that dude was all over the freaking
for real, dude. Oh my god,
locker
yeah.
room, like
locker like room, plural.
Like his MO, like he's like wherever I work, I'm sleeping with all the women.
Yeah, at least three per division. Fuck.
CM Punk. No, but
oh Phil,
I thought it worked. Oh Phil, oh, cry baby Phil. And then match of the night. I hate CM Punk.
there it is. See, I knew it.
Match of the night, definitely Team Cena versus the Authority.
Holy shit,
love
this match.
This match. At first, like, it started off, and they had that whole thing, and it was like, you're going to do it. Get out there. Go, go, go. And I didn't see it come. I don't know how I didn't, because, like, rewatching the match, like, it was really telegraphed in the whole way. They were really jazzing up Mark Henry to go out there and do something that it was going to be disastrous. And, like, the only way it would have been better is if it was Shawn Michaels instead of Big Show. Because the best Survivor Series opening of all time was in 2006 or 2007 when it was Team DX versus Team Rated RKO.
Mm-hmm.
And Snitsky came running at Shawn Michaels as soon as the match started, and it was just like, pow, sweet chin music, 1, 2, 3, he's out. And then Shawn Michaels came back, he's like, did you see that fan run into the match? No, that wasn't a fan, that was a guy, that guy was in the match. He was in the match? Yeah, he was in the match. Oh, so we're winning. That's good. So, like, I just, like, prayed that, like, he was going to, like, KO him and get him the pin, and he was going to, like, do, like, something like that. That moment was the funniest thing that's ever happened in Survivor Series, was when Shawn Michaels did that. But seeing Mark Henry just get clocked clean, like, it did my 11-year-old self a lot of justice. I was very happy to see it.
Yeah.
I still hate Mark Henry. I didn't get some of the decisions they made throughout this match, though, like...
Such as?
So, they built up that the big difference maker, the thing that was going to turn the tide, because the first guy to join Team Cena, and so, like, you know, de facto, Cena's, you know, right-hand man was Dolph Ziggler. And Dolph Ziggler was the guy that was, you know, put through fucking hell.
Right.
Through the entire thing. So, of course, Ziggler was going to be, like, the guy. But the guy who was courted to be, like, the difference maker, like, the dude who was going to change the world for Team Cena and change it, was the big guy. It was Ryback. And then Ryback was the first dude KO'd.
Because Ryback is useless. Like
he's not, though. Like, he has good matches. He gets the crowd behind him. He's got an exciting look.
He hurts people,
style.
Whatever.
He doesn't hurt anybody. He only hurts babies who fake it. And it's like, Ryback kicked me in the stomach so hard that I got a bump on my back, and somebody told me it was a staph infection. what else is he going to complain about? Like, I don't know. Ryback's tweet was hilarious, though, when he just sent out a picture of, like, a CM Punk broken body surrounded by, like, 10 Rybacks.
10 Rybacks.
And then the corporate machine was like, delete that tweet. Delete your tweets.
Stop that. Don't talk about it.
don't argue with Phil.
We're doing it live. Yeah, please don't.
But no, I am surprised to hear this. So you are not on Team Ryback.
The only time I was on Team Ryback was when he was doing the Feed Me More thing, like way, way, way back.
He's still
before
doing the Feed Me More.
No, because remember he went through the whole Ryback rules thing.
Well, yeah,
so
that was garbage, and
I know,
and his heel thing was garbage, but he's got a lot of face potential for a good
year
run as, like, a major dude. I
think he's already
very
ruined
much
for
on
me.
His man. He's and, ruined for he, you?
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely, like, they ruined him when they did that Ryback rules thing. Like, to me, he's worthless now.
Wow.
Yeah, like, he's on, I can't. Yeah.
Dude, that would be, like just completely forgetting about, like, The Undertaker after that frickin' Big Evil gimmick. of the biker, or
it took me a while to
American
Badass,
like
him again.
I hated
that gimmick so much.
Or like abandoning Booker T just because he was King Booker.
But in fairness, King Booker was his best gimmick.
King Booker was not his best gimmick.
I love that gimmick,
dude. What?
All hail King Booker,
dude! Any gimmick that involves bringing in Charmel
and screaming
and having Kurt Angle like want to fuck your wife just randomly.
What was the thing he called her? Gutter.
Your wife, Booker. Your wife, Booker, is gutter trash. And here's the thing. I want to sleep with your wife, Booker. It was like, wait, what? Like, is she gutter trash, or do you want to sleep with her? Or do you want to sleep with her because she's gutter trash? Kurt, I need you back in WWE so that I can solve these questions. But I never understood the Kurt Angle thing in WWE where, like, he was the guy who wanted to fuck everybody's wife.
Right?
Like,
I think
single feud devolved into him trying to sleep with somebody's freaking wife. Like, I kind of wanted him to bang Deborah just so that he could have a good feud with Stone Cold. I mean, he did have a good feud with Stone Cold, but it was confusing because Stone Cold kept changing from face to heel, like, every other week. He was almost Big Show bad at that point.
Yeah.
See,
but at least Big Show, like, Big I don't Show really, bad, yeah, no. Speaking of Big Show bad, yeah. Well, actually, can we talk about the Rusev thing? How he still, still has not been pinned.
So, I actually thought that Rusev was completely, like, pure undefeated. But apparently he's had a lot of losses.
Yeah, he's been defeated, he's just never been pinned or submitted.
Yeah.
That's where he's at.
So I mean, that's the moment that we're waiting for is the moment where somebody makes him tap. I think it's gonna have to be tapping rather than being a pinfall.
Mm.
I mean if your whole thing is that you break people down with the freaking camel clutch, you gotta get it. You gotta tap. You gotta go down. And the right man for that is the aforementioned Kurt Angle. They gotta bring it back, but I mean, apparently they're supposed to announce it, but TNA's probably gonna sink their hooks in so that they can have something to watch on Destination America or whatever fucking channel they're on. But poor TNA. I hope I'm gonna give them 3 episodes when they start their new deal on their new network.
Destination America.
Cause if I have that channel, I honestly don't know. But
I'm not checking. But nor do
I'm gonna check it out. I'm giving them 3 episodes just because I'm hoping New Deal they're gonna want to come in with some fanfare and do something like hire new writers or something. But you know, if they die, they die. And I don't think I'm a bad wrestling fan if I don't care if like the number 2 company dies, because we don't really need. A number
TNA?
We don't need a Monday Night War situation or anything to make it better. We just need good writing and good matches. That's all you need.
What we need is a good wrestling company, because TNA is not a good wrestling company. So there's that.
Not right now. Not for a few years they haven't been. Not since they lost Christian. I would say losing Christian was the tipping point. Not that, like, Christian has, like, become, like, the guy in WWE, but he certainly was a lost effort from TNA.
Because
he was kind of TNA's guy for a while.
Yeah, he was their main eventer for, like, a solid year where he was, like, main event status. And then, did he get injured in TNA?
I don't believe so.
I think something happened when he was like, kind of like in and out. Like he didn't stay. He was hovering on the main event. I don't remember why though.
Interesting.
But anyway,
I don't remember that. But I don't know. Rusev. I just thought that was like a really big lumbering. Like it made him seem like more of an oaf than a monster. And I don't get why you would want that presentation. why would you want the presentation that your Russian bulldog is an oaf rather than a destroyer?
Yeah.
Because if it had been, like, he was going to, like, pound Ziggler's, like, head through, like, they should have brought back the cinder block. They should have had him go and do his big, like, Russian stomp.
I forgot all about the cinder block. Yeah, they could have,
like,
used that in,
like, they should have had him go to, like, smash, like, Ziggler's head through the cinder block with his big Russian stomp that he does. And I don't know if it's called the Russian stomp or why I even added Russian to that, but,
because reasons.
That big stomp that he does. Because he's got the Russian character.
Russian super kick? No.
Yeah, and have him, like, smash his foot into the cinder block, and, like, he's, like, hobbling, trying to get to the thing, but he can't get up because his, like, foot's jacked up from it. Then I could have been like, oh, okay, like, Ziggler moved his head out of the way, didn't get smashed, whatever. Yeah. But, like,
I think this was the only way that they could think, you know, on their feet, so to speak.
But, I mean, there's other spots they could have done. They
I know there's
even,
other spots, but, you know.
They could have done the, like, I'm coming at you with the chair. Oh, I super kicked the chair, and the chair hits you in the face, and now you're counted out, or whatever. Like,
DQ'd. I think they just wanted him to be counted out, and this is the only way that they could think of doing it. I mean, it was a pretty decent spot when he crashed through the table, so.
I mean, it was cool seeing him crash to the table and everything, and I liked that, like, he's strong enough that he can crash to the table and almost make it in for a 10 count. Because, I mean, he was, like, right there, and, I mean, if
you're
in, like, you're all like, oh, no, he's about to break his back or whatever.
Yeah. But, so he definitely, like, he still was strong, dominant, you know, like, he was still, like, strong out of this. Like, he took a table spot that normally knocks people out.
After beating Ryback, who was built in, like, the tough guy of...
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he still came out strong out of this. So, again, like, as far as, like, the match goes, like...
It just made him seem oafish is my main problem. And I don't really like a dumb, strong guy. I want my, like...
This coming from the guy who just said that he likes Ryback.
Ryback's not dumb!
Ryback's dumb as shit.
Ryback. What?
What? When has he ever...
Stiff Stiffield could write PhD-level work, man. I love Skip. He's amazing.
I don't think he can pronounce him. Or spell him, for that matter. But anyway...
You could spell PhD?
Probably not.
It's all like F... What? PH makes an F, right?
Right.
But, guys.
But anyway...
Ryback.
So after that, we had, what, Eric Rowan beating the Harper? No, Eric Rowan was beat by Harper, his former tag partner.
Harper, the second least disappointing frickin'
big guy. Wait, I see what you did there. Yeah. The better big guy.
Better big guy, but he's still bad. I don't understand this. Like, Luke Harper is the best big guy in the business. It's like...
Whoa.
No, he's not.
I don't know about this better, the best big guy.
I'm always hearing this, that Luke Harper's the best big guy in the business.
He's
And I'm like, dudes, like, Kane's still in the business. Like,
yeah, like, I would compare him to Kane.
I don't care.
I would say he's...
But Kane is still the best big man in the business. Like,
Abyss
seemed like he was going to be the best big guy in the business, and then he just, like, whatever happened to TNA, I don't know.
I think at one point you could argue that he was the best big guy in the business, but, you know, like, it was lost in the shuffle. Abyss, yeah.
Yeah.
At one point, like, he was.
Yeah, but, and I mean, like, Big Show certainly has had multiple times as the best big man in the business and everything. I mean, clearly right now
isn't. Yeah, he's just inconsistent, but I think that comes from the fact that, you know, booking for him is inconsistent, so I'm not going to blame him for that. I'm going to blame that on the booking.
I don't even necessarily blame the booking. I mean,
I would blame it on the booking because remember when he was ECW champ?
No, he can do amazing things, but I think his heart has to be in it. I think a lot of Big Show's problem is, like, there are times where it's noticeable that he does not give a shit what he's doing in there.
Yeah, well, there's that, and there's also from the fact that they put him in silly stories, so it comes down to the booking.
I suppose. Yeah. I don't know, this blame the booker seems an awful lot CM Punk-ish, but...
Well, you know what? If the writers suck, then the writers suck. It has nothing to do with the wrestlers.
This is true, and they got like 25 writers now, so...
Which is insane, as so, Stone Cold pointed out.
So which writer do you want to work with here? I loved Seth Rollins in this match.
He was fucking like...
He was great. He was just coming in and just like... Stomp, boom, smack, all over the place. And I really think that the showdown of Rollins and Ziggler was the feeling of the night. But when what I thought was really interesting, Cena didn't get any offense in the entire match, I can recall.
No, he didn't, and he was eliminated mid-match. Like, yeah, the match was 43 minutes long. He got eliminated at the 25-minute mark.
Yeah, his...
insane.
The funny thing was, he got eliminated after the Rusev big spot and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rusev big spot was right after Ziggler had just been absolutely, like, molested by the entirety of Team Authority. Like, they all took turns just beating the living hell out of him, and then Rusev really beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
And fucked up the spot. Ziggler came in. So Ziggler took a ton of beating...
Ten minutes, at least.
Tagged into Cena. Cena came in. As soon as he came in, Big Show clocks him.
Yep.
He's out.
His own team, yeah.
Big Show walks out of the match, so I guess that counts as eliminating himself. Yep. I was kind of surprised at that.
It's a voluntary count-out.
I was kind of interested that they said Soul Survivor instead of, like, the winner is Ziggler and Big Show. And Big Show comes out, he's like, yay! Or so. But, So, voluntary count out, so he got himself counted out, basically. Yep. And then Ziggler's there.
Alone, versus three.
10 minutes, versus four.
Was it four?
Only Rusev and, Rusev and Martin.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't care why they're saying Ziggler only eliminated three guys then. Ziggler eliminated four, because he was personally responsible for Rusev being counted out. He was the one there. If it wasn't for him,
they just out of the way. they don't count it as it being eliminated since it's a count out. So like, it's weird. Like when it's count outs, they don't have like.
I don't think that's fair. I don't think it's fair that Roman Reigns gets this record for four eliminations, but Ziggler doesn't get to tie it. This is a little shenanigansy.
Yeah,
against
I think it's because of the count out. I think that's the only reason. That being said, like he's still. Dominated.
Was
like,
the
I
man.
Mean, he still was
Dolph
like the
Ziggler was the man. Yeah. When that match clicked over and we had Ziggler alone against Kane, Luke Harper, and Seth Rollins, along with J&J Security, Triple H, and Stephanie, all on the outside. Not that Stephanie was going to go in and like power slam him or anything, but
as hilarious as that may be.
You know what? Stephanie doing the pedigree just works for me for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why. Like
it just does.
Every single time she does it, I'm like, oh, that's impressive. Like, which is weird because like it's not like just because like any woman doing the pedigree would always like make me like think it was cool. I hated when Chyna would do it.
Right.
I hated when Chyna would do it. When she did that second rope pedigree to Chris Jericho, it was the dumbest looking spot I've ever seen. I really enjoyed the motion of Dolph Ziggler in that match. I mean, he went through a baptism of fire, man.
Yeah. This was like the only thing that I can compare it to is the Stone Cold Bret Hart WrestleMania 13 double turn where. I think it was 13, wasn't it? Or was it 11? I can't remember right now.
No, it's 13.
Is it 13? Yeah, when, you know, Bret Hart had Stone Cold and the sharpshooter, and, you know, Stone Cold would just not give up. Like, he would just not give up. And in the face of, in the eyes of many fans, that was, like, the moment where they're like, oh, shit, this is, like, a legit guy. Like, this is a tough dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of people, this was their Ziggler moment where they realized, like, where they...
Oh, you know, absolutely.
When they saw, like, oh my god, like, this guy's a superstar. Like, dude, look at him go.
I'm sitting there just watching this match, like, oh my god, Dolph Ziggler is the man. Like, Dolph Ziggler will not die.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, yeah.
Because think about this. In the same exact match, John Cena, fresh.
Mm-hmm.
One punch taken out of the equation. Dolph Ziggler,
Ziggler took every finisher.
Took a Rusev sweep kick. I think Rusev had him in the, like, almost tried to lock in the, no, he did that to Ryback.
Yeah, it was Ryback. The accolade.
The accolade. Camel clutch. But,
there's no camels involved.
There are no camels. He's not clutching any camels. So he took the super kick from, Rusev. That's the name. He took choke slam from
Big Show.
Choke slam and,
Kane.
No, choke slam from Kane, sidewalk slam from Kane. Kane had some, like, weird growth on his back. Like, I don't know what was going on there. Like, scary. But, like, I thought he was just gonna, like, explode, like, with an alien out of it in the back of it, like, in the middle of the match or something. Like, there was a spot.
Yeah.
But, took sidewalk slams. I think he took a curb stomp and kicked out?
Yep. Yeah, he took the...
And I believe that's the first time anyone has kicked out of the curb stomp.
He took the curb stomp, and not only did he take it, but he... No. He was going to take it. He took the pre finisher to the curb stomp. I forgot what it is that Seth Rollins does. He was going to do the curb stomp. He moved out of the way and did the zigzag, like, in one smooth motion.
Yeah. That was awesome. Great. But I think he actually got hit with a curb stomp later on.
I probably did. And
but I mean,
credit where credit is due.
Everything.
Seth Rollins was, like, selling moves the way Randy Orton was sell moves.
Randy Orton is the best seller currently. Like,
yeah, like he sold the zigzag, that zigzag that that he took after the curb stomp that he attempted. The way he folded his body and, like, just died. Like, he looked like he was a corpse.
Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic.
No, Seth is really impressive. Seth is, I think, underrated by a lot of people because I don't know what it is. There's a subset of wrestling fans who, like, still don't understand that, like, just because someone's playing a heel and maybe because that heel character makes them more cowardly,
mm-hmm.
doesn't make their wrestling worse.
Right, just like the it's just like the conversation we've had about Randy Orton. Like, people say he's boring, quote unquote.
Yes,
and it's not that he's boring; it's that you don't understand the wrestling psychology. Like, if you think if you watch Randy Orton wrestle and you're like, "This is boring," then you just don't get it. Like, that's all it is. Like, because he's great at wrestling psychology. It's just that he's very methodical and very slow, and that's just his style. You can say, oh, I don't like slow style, but that's about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But Dolph Ziggler, I mean, just taking all those hits, going through, he pulls through, he eliminates Luke Harper, he eliminates Kane, and he's got Seth Rollins beaten, but then he has to beat freaking J&J Security. He has to beat Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, and then he gets another pinning situation. He's about to win the match. And Triple H, I knew this spot was coming because I was waiting mm-hmm. for it, for the spot. And it's always my favorite part of any match where there's, like, a heel authority figure that's watching a match is
just
the spot
when they lose
where,
it,
where the ref is counting the pin for the good guy, and the bad guy pulls the ref out of the ring and punches the ref.
Yeah,
I don't know why. But that still, like, I know the spot's coming in matches like that, and
mm-hmm.
every time it gets me, like, oh, he just stole it from him or something like that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was, like, the cursor, like, they're gonna bring in the dirty ref, that's gonna make them win, and then the biggest comeback, like, the biggest entrance.
You can't call it a comeback because he was never there to begin with.
That's true. The biggest debut for his WWE time. I can't call it a debut though. Like,
yeah, like
biggest WWE debut. Like,
yeah,
biggest WWE.
Biggest. Oh, I got it. Biggest WWE defection fucking ever.
Oh my gosh! But it was incredible because there are fans. I mean, Sting hasn't done anything for about 3 years now. I think he'd been away from TNA.
He'd been doing things, but he was very, like, low-key.
Very
low-key.
And
he wasn't in World Heavyweight title matches, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I didn't even know that he'd been wrestling as much as you say, but... Yeah. Like, I hadn't heard the name Sting in forever, but, like, I knew he'd signed a deal. I'd seen, like, little bits on the network where he's talking with about, like, how he remembers the Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
He did, he did a little side panel business where he was talking with Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan and everything. And,
yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, my dream match is The Undertaker, blah, 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 and all sorts of stuff. But then he comes in, and this is the beauty. Half of WWE's audience, I would argue, okay, maybe 30% of WWE's audience, I would argue, has never seen Steen before in their life.
You would, wait, you want to say 30? 30? I would wager right now, the current WWE viewer, like the people who actually buy product and all that,
mm-hmm.
I would argue it's way higher than 30%.
You think higher than 30%?
I think... At least 45 to 55% have never heard of Sting.
Okay,
you have to understand there's a lot of kids involved in this.
No, there are a lot of kids, and that's why I said like I said 50, and then I kind of renegotiated.
Yeah.
Down. But I mean,
no, you're right. It's 50, 55%.
I would say a lot of people have never heard of Sting. Guess who just probably sold a shit ton of shirts on the WWE shop? Like that was an entrance that. Would boggle your mind because, like, that's the beauty is all these people signed up for the free Survivor Series on the WWE Network are watching this, and they see this debut, and they see this moment, and they're just sitting there, and they're like, who is that, Dad? Like, and they see him staring down with Triple H, and, I mean, there were some people, like, talking about, like, how that, I was mind-boggled at some reviewers going, oh man, that stare down went way too long. I was mesmerized at the stare down of Triple H and Sting. I thought that was an incredible stare down.
Oh dude, that's the only thing if there's one thing.
That stare down needs to lead to the WrestleMania match I want of Sting. I want Sting
Triple H.
I want that match. I've gone on record that I don't care about Undertaker and I don't care about an Undertaker versus Sting match, because I think they're both methodical guys, and I think it would be like a slow match.
I wouldn't call Sting a methodical guy. He's a little more spry than Undertaker.
Not these days, I don't think. Maybe. Maybe he's got it in the tank.
He's still, judging from the last matches I saw him in, he was still pretty, you know, he moved more than, you know, you would think he would. So, but anyway, I was since you mentioned the shirt thing, I sent you on www.shop.com.
Yeah, Scorpion sweatpants.
Yeah, he's the second character featured for products, like in the middle. Like he is right in the middle. He's with Cena, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Sting, Bella Twins, and Dolph Ziggler. Those are your top sellers right now, apparently, or your featured sellers.
Oh, that's a cool plastic mask. $10 for a Sting plastic mask. All right, I got to stop plugging the WWE shop here. better send me a check for that one.
Yeah.
But
sponsors.
I kind of want to buy that mask. That's a cool mask.
I'm telling you, man, Sting moves merchandise.
But Sting, that was a fantastic introduction. It had all the mystery that you needed. And
he never spoke.
That miraculous, like, kind of come in. It was very much back to like when he first adopted the Crow gimmick.
It was very 90s attitude era.
It was
like,
so perfect for him coming in the way that he did. That stare down, and I mean, all these people have now just like gotten their free WWE Network. Like I was saying, they're watching this match. They see that, Daddy, who is that? Oh, that's Sting. Sting's amazing. Like, he does all these things and everything. And what are they going to do? They're going to keep their WWE Network, and they're going to watch, you know,
WCW
champions, and they're going to watch, you know, War Games and all these other things that have these iconic Sting moments and be like, oh my god, I love Sting. When's Sting going to be on TV again? Oh, Sting's going to be on every couple weeks or something. Like,
or WrestleMania. I guarantee that he's going to be in one of the WrestleMania main events. Sting, like, that's
Sting's got to be at WrestleMania. And in my opinion, like, he needs to fight a big match with Triple H.
Yeah. Well, because I'm torn now, because
a big match with Triple H.
I kind of wanted the Triple H versus Rock match that was teased a couple of weeks ago, or almost a month ago, if not longer.
True.
So I kind of want that match because it's been a while since The Rock and Triple H have been in a ring, and they always had really good matches. Like, their intercontinental feuds were good, their World Heavyweight Championship feuds were good, their non-title matches were good, so I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Did you know that Rock versus Triple H was the first title match I had seen in over 5 years? The debut episode of SmackDown. It had been 5 years since I had USA Network, so I hadn't been able to watch Raw ever. And so 5 years had passed. I was able to watch the first episode of SmackDown because it was on UPN, a channel I actually had, and I got to see an amazing match, Shawn Michaels guest reffing Rock versus Triple H. So I am very nostalgic for Rock versus Triple H matches.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of want that more. For face value, I really want Sting versus Taker. I know you don't want that, but for theatrics, that's the match that I want.
You know, if they want to sell Royal Rumble on Sting versus Triple H and then, you know, lead us towards WrestleMania with a returning Triple H versus The Rock, and then have Sting versus Taker if they can find him. But Paul Heyman. I just really want my Sting Triple H moment because I think that is the match that you're going to be pleased with, but Sting versus Taker is the match.
Shit, there's so many matches like I can think of right now of like people that have never wrestled Sting that should have wrestled Sting like back in the heyday, like Shawn Michaels versus Sting. Like, that's a match that I would pay good money to watch.
I would pay exorbitant amounts.
Stone Cold versus Sting. Yeah, but Stone Cold versus Sting would be like insane.
I think Shawn Michaels had the perfect send-off. I hate that he did that match and like the way that he was kind of cradled off, but I think when you have that kind of match as your last match, I think you never should wrestle again. I think Ric Flair should never wrestle again. That was the perfect final match for him.
Yeah, that was the best like retirement match.
I mean, I don't think that's the case for Taker. Like, if he feels he never needs to wrestle again, he doesn't. I don't think him losing to Brock Lesnar should be his last match. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with kind of what Vince said. Like, you've got to eventually give back. No one wants to give back more than Taker. And and he had to give back by, you know, doing the job, which I'd been saying for years.
Yeah.
I mean, some people say, you know, not really his
thing. Well, and remember, it was never really, like, up to him, apparently. Like, in that interview, Stone Cold asked him.
Really, really interesting. Like,
yeah, it was up to Vince.
Did Taker just say, like, this is the guy? Or, like, no, how did it go? And it was up to Vince. It was Vince's call.
Yep. Yeah. So it was always up to Vince. So, like, we can't even hold it against Taker. Because I used to think
can't
Taker
hold
had,
it
like,
against
saying
Lesnar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. People who were like, oh, Lesnar probably put that in his contract. And it's like, no, he never, I don't think he had any intentions. So, but yeah, so we have Sting back in the WWE. The Authority is gone.
Dolph Ziggler is G-Man.
Dolph Ziggler is basically like the holy, he's basically he's the Shawn Michaels to Cena's.
Ooh.
He's Shawn Michaels. Yeah, he's the Shawn Michaels to Cena's Triple H, if we're going to do, like, an analogy.
I could see that.
Like, that's kind of like, because it seems like they're both on the same page, and, like, they're both good guys, but they're helping each other out, and, like, on Raw, Cena was still kind of, like, you know, telling people, like, hey, Ziggler is the guy that you should, you know, be worried about, because he just beat the whole Authority.
Seriously, man.
Yeah, so I like that.
I like that very much. But excellent show, completely based on that one match, but other matches in there were good. Some of the matches weren't, but completely worth the $9.99, and it was free, so you didn't even have to pay that. Incredible show. I loved that Survivor Series. I'm going to rewatch that particular match a few times over the next few weeks just because it was just so powerful.
Probably going to rewatch the Titty Master one as well, if you can call it a match.
But thank you for joining us. As always, I am Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Strawhead Regan.